Hi, I'm Matt Brennan, editor-in-chief of The Envelope and executive producer of The Envelope podcast. I recently had the chance to catch up with Ethan and Ryan Hawke at the Sundance Film Festival about making independent film and TV, including Oscar-nominated film Blue Moon. I thought you'd enjoy our conversation as a bit of a bonus at the end of award season. Thanks for listening. I'm super excited to talk about making independent film and television with two people who've proven themselves to be really great at it. Please join me in welcoming Ethan and Ryan Hawke.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for being here. Ethan, I would be remiss if I didn't start with congratulations on your Oscar nomination for Blue Moon.
You know, I think this is definitely my favorite way to start an interview.
Yeah, I think
this is the way I should begin everything.
Where were you when you found out?
In bed. When I was younger, it's turned into, there's so much journalism about it. There's so much noise about it. When I was younger, I didn't even know when the announcements would come out. But now I went to bed. No, I'm going to, I don't want to wake up unless it's good news.
So I read an interview that you gave sort of as a reaction to the nomination where you really graciously praised some of the folks who didn't get nominated. And you mentioned, you know, I've been through it before where there might have been some talk about getting a nomination and I was disappointed. Is there a particular time that you remember where you sort of felt like, oh, that's a bummer that didn't work out, whether for yourself or a project that you were involved with?
Well,
You forget all the failures.
No, First Reformed was a movie that some people really championed and really liked. And, that had some energy behind it. Paul did get nominated. And so there's those, the Good Lord Bird was another project Ryan and I worked on together that I was crazy proud of, but it didn't get that kind of accolades and things like that. And so it, when you're expecting it, it stings a little bit. We're all in high school. It's silly, but you know, I try to look at it. I think I said this in the article. I try to see the awards aspect is kind of this thing we have to all go through. It's so good for the industry. You know, people love competition. People love a story. Competitions make things exciting. It's a great way to celebrate movies. And so we all have to kind of put ourselves through this, turning briefly the arts into a competition for the sake of the form itself.
That was actually a good segue into my question for you, Ryan, which is, you know, we talk in the business about the awards bump. I'm wondering if there's a way that you could sort of articulate what that actually is and what it looks like, whether it's for a project like Blue Moon might get in the next couple of months, something like The Good Lord Bird after a Golden Globe nomination. You know, how does that actually play out from your perspective?
Well, I don't have numbers on the top of my head, but I think it's huge. I mean, especially for, as we were saying, the Blue Moon, the little engine that could, you know, it hasn't even grossed $3 million in theaters yet. And it's been out for 4 months or so. Mm-hmm. So it's huge exposure. And it's not free, but it is such a positive way to have a film be celebrated and break through the zeitgeist. There's just so much noise out there. So it's enormous for small films. And TV, it's harder because a lot of those data points aren't shared with the whole producing team. So for Good Lord Bird, it was all kind of anecdotal how much those awards are helpful. It's not as if you get a idea of how many more people are logging on for that subscription or watching it. But you do, you know, I'm lucky because nobody's going to recognize my face, but they do recognize Ethan's, and you can just tell when things are piercing the zeitgeist a little bit more. And so after certain nominations, people will say they've seen it in a way that's just a new onslaught. So, without a lot of specifics.
Yeah, but like, for example, we're friends with Bobby Cannavale and Rose Byrne, and Rose has this wonderful movie this year, If I Had Legs, I Could Kick You. And Bobby was just telling me yesterday that the amount of people that have seen, the people who've seen that movie doubled since she won the Golden Globe. Like, it made $1 million before the Golden Globe, and it made $1 million since 2 weeks ago. So it goes, putting things in front of people, making people curious to do it. When you don't have a giant advertising campaign to push something, people need to hear about it a lot before they decide they're going to actually watch it.
And it probably also means certain streamers will put it higher up in the algorithm. So, I mean, some of it's people making decisions about how they're going to market it, which is also the double benefit.
Well, I'm thrilled if it gets more people to see Blue Moon.
Me too.
I wanted to go back to the beginning of Under the Influence Productions. Like, what is the eureka moment where you go from kind of already working in this industry and making films to saying, like, I want my own company to help sort of shape the projects that I'm working on?
Can I start?
Okay.
We did it. The first thing Ryan and I did together was a documentary called See More, an Introduction. And it was a great way. We'd been married for a little while and we really love working together and we think the same way. And Ryan has unbelievable literary taste and her acumen about scripts is really powerful. And I love it. And I love talking to her about things. And I wanted us to make movies together. And we kind of decided that a great way to start would be to actually just make a movie and to try to make it as frugally as possible. And the one great thing about the time period we're living in regards to documentaries, when I was a kid, it was really expensive to make a documentary, but it's gotten so much cheaper. And we met this amazing piano maestro and it was this kind of experience where we just wanted the world to meet him. He was such a beautiful man and he had so much to offer people that we had this very, very simple idea that I really thought, even if we just dropped it on YouTube, it'd be fine, you know, but we fell in love with it and we worked on it and we learned how to work together and we really had a great time doing it. And then we started taking it to festivals and IFC picked it up and it turned into a little success for us. And it gave us a lot of confidence. And I would say that was our eureka.
That was the eureka moment. Yeah. I do think you can narrativize it different ways. I think Ethan is a consummate artist and a jack of all trades. And so you are constantly making things. And in order to have those projects happen because they needed financing or, you know, the time and space to release them or put them out in the world, it was nice to codify sort of those projects that you're doing, perhaps as an actor, perhaps as a director, perhaps as a writer. And so I think that sort of allowed us to both follow things we cared about in a way that just wouldn't have happened as naturally.
Trying to sneak things into the atmosphere that might not exist if we didn't push.
You've so successfully since Seymour built the company into this sort of sustainable, reliably good production company, but I'm sure there were growing pains. I'm curious if you could talk about like a moment of challenge as you were sort of going from, okay, we're going to start really frugally with this small doc project to where you are now making a wider array of projects across film and TV, and then how you overcame those growing pains.
Yeah, good question. I mean, one of the biggest challenges is one of our greatest assets, which is that he's a decent actor, I guess. And so, you know, sometimes he's like really busy doing things. And so that is both a nice reprieve to figure out what we want to develop and work on, but it also means maybe you're gone for 4 months. And so
she said that with a lot of happiness, didn't she? Those are nice 4 months.
No, I and we also have children together. And so sometimes it's just, yeah, finding the time to keep all of the balls in the air in the way that they need to be tossed and loved and thrown.
And the hardest thing I think in independent film is figuring out how to responsibly raise money so that the people who are investing make their money back and are glad they did it. That's every time that happens, it's good for the whole film community. You know, when a little movie makes its money back and the people who took a gamble on it benefit from it and they see the rewards of putting something substantive and meaningful in the world and they don't go broke doing it, that's a big reward. And every time you lose somebody some money, it really hurts. And it's difficult and you start to see why there's this great pull to mediocrity. It's just because the pull is, I don't want to lose. I don't want to lose money. I don't want to take a chance on this. And we do, we celebrate it when we see it every year. You know, you're being very kind about Blue Moon or whatever. That's very hard to raise the money for a movie that all takes place in one room with a bunch of people gabbing. I mean, there's a lot of reasons not to make that movie. Largely, and a lot of times people who are investing in movies, they want to imagine what's the best case scenario? And the truth is the best case scenario for independent film is making a little bit of money. Unless you have zombies in it, unless you're doing something that is a known, something that is easier to sell. And that's not what we do. You know, we're trying to swim against the stream a little bit.
We could do zombies.
We make an interesting zombie. No, I just mean it's the rubber meets the road there all the time. And there's so many projects we have that you get frustrated about because you can't get them. Can't get them born. And then sometimes the universe just smiles on you and doors open that you don't expect. And it's always been a little mysterious to me. And it forces us to be developing multiple things at the same time because there's a good chance none of them will happen. And then sometimes you get unfortunate or fortunate and
too many things are going at once and you have to choose which.
And you feel overwhelmed. Yeah.
Forgive me if this is a too basic of a question, but I would be really curious for you, what is the biggest difference between developing projects for film and developing them for television? You know, historically, they were so siloed, and now it feels like both viewers and performers, writers, directors really comfortably move back and forth across that line.
I still think your question's astute because there's such that might be where the biggest differences. I mean, and in production, but it's just, I mean, I've only done independent films. So it's working with a small group of producers that are all playing every role. So their relationship to the financing and the creative is pretty holistic. Whereas in TV, it's still a little more siloed in terms of, you know, where the money's coming from and where the creative elements are. So I do think there's those two. The players may overlap a lot more, but I still think the process feels a little bit more distinct. And TV just has so many more check-in points. I mean, independent film is
still got a maverick.
Yeah. And, you know, your prep, your production, your post. And I mean, if you're lucky, you know, TV, I mean, we've never done reshoots on a film. we've done every TV show we've done. Yeah. So yeah. I think just even that discrepancy is significant.
More, you know, The Good Lord Bird was our passion project. We'd fallen in love with this book and we pitched it to Showtime. They got behind it. And that was our first foray into television. It was a little blessed in that we had such passion for that material, the two of us did. And that passion for that material brought people together. The Lowdown was very different because it's just rooted around a belief in Sterling Harjo. You know, we love Reservation Dogs. Sterling is a friend. We believe in him. And so it feels a little bit, am I wrong, more like an independent film of what Ryan's job is, particularly, which is championing a filmmaker, trying to block and defend for them so they're in a position to succeed and that the what I call the tide of mediocrity doesn't crush it, you know?
So The Good Lord Bird is a show that I myself once described in a piece as utterly righteous. First Reformed is a really radical political work. I'm curious about in the sort of hyper partisan climate that we live in, what your conversations are like with your backers or with a television network to get political material that you believe in across the finish line when there are a lot of people in the business who want to avoid it, if at all possible?
I mean, you're just diving into the heart of what it's like to be an American right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, are we making stories to sing to the choir? Do we want to encourage dialogue across people who see themselves as different? You know, one of the things I really wanted for Good Lord Bird was to bring people together. I wanted them to sell it as a Western. I didn't want them to sell it as a civil rights piece. You know, I wanted them to come to that by accident. You know, one of the things that's so genius about Get Out is it ends up being this exquisite piece of political art, but it's disguised as a horror film. You can just go see it. It's just entertaining. And that's what we wanted for The Good Lord Bird. It's just a great story. And it happens to be about America. And it happens to have a tremendous, James McBride is a genius. And the writing is so, oh, it just makes, I find it made me reflect on where we are now in a great way, but I didn't want that just to be to one community. And it is really hard if you, with a television show, particularly, like one of the things that's wonderful about The Lowdown is it aspires not to be left or right, but to be humanitarian and to be about the independent spirit and telling the truth, which everyone says they believe in.
But FX has those conversations with us, and they're wonderful partners in regards to,
they really are,
you know, not, and they're not shying away from politics as being something that should be on the table. I think there are projects where we're very clear that we're interested in it because of some of the messaging in it or the conversations that's being had, but that might not be what you want to forecast with the people that might back it. That's pretty hard though, because we are forthcoming and you never want to feel like you're trying to, you know, deliver medicine with a spoonful of sugar, you know, especially with your partners. So I would say we can't help but always announce if there's a message that we're excited about in something.
It's so hard with a movie like First Reformed, which you were so passionate about for that very reason that you're talking about. And I believed in the message of that movie. I believe in Paul Schrader so much, but it's still so hard to get anybody to want to see it because they know it's dark. They know it's hard. And so when you don't, you want the whole team to believe in the idea and not be trying to be cover up what the movie's really about.
You talked about sort of defending the filmmaker from the tide of mediocrity. Hmm. I'm curious about, like, you know, when it comes down to brass tacks, how do you think through where to make a compromise in the service of the greater good of getting the project done? I think about this as an editor all the time. I think I say, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, like twice a day. But also there are times when you really need to put your foot down and say, no, it has to be this. How do you think of it?
I just find it one of the deepest mysteries, because what you're really talking about is when to believe in yourself and double down on yourself and when to have humility. Because there's a time and place to go, I'm not always right. You know, all right, let's compromise. There might be a better way. FX is very good at it. And I've met people in my life. When I was younger, I had this idea that, oh, it's kind of the auteur myth. You've got to believe in yourself and everybody's against you. And you realize everybody's not against you. There's a lot of people that are trying to help you not fall on your ass. And I think it's such the journey of being an adult. I mean, when you're in writing, editing, I've written things, and it is true with a good editor, they can cut out things, make it more economical, really help you see what your point is, and to trust that you don't have to say your point 15 times, you know, and then there are people that can help you. And then there are times when you have to say, no, I'm leaving. This scene is in. This is, I mean, I went through this on, with Linkletter a bunch of times. People wanted demanding reshoots of things. He's impossible. You can't give him notes because all he is, what a great idea. And then he doesn't do it.
You have such, I think your sensibility in that area is impeccable. You, I think all of your years of experience, you do know your own heart and desire. So in Wildcat, there were a lot of compromises, but you also got to do, you knew which things were necessary. And part of, I think what you can do is surround yourself with people you know really well. So Rick does trust you. And if you give notes to Rick, he's going to consider them. And you trust me. And you have learned from your collaborators which people will, you know, say, okay, I'll back off because, you know, you clearly want that. And which people are, you know, who you need to say, okay, I'm still upset, but like, I'm going to, you know, give up that tiger in the shot.
The best guide, I think what I would say to young filmmakers and things is that make sure you're compromising so that the people who love what you're doing love it more, not so that the people who don't like it hate it less. You know,
that's a great piece of advice. You know, yeah.
Because that often happens. And then you end up in a nowhere zone.
I need that like crocheted on a pillow.
Yeah.
I'd be remiss if I didn't talk a little bit about the film that you have here at Sundance, The Wait. It's about a man who becomes embroiled in a Depression-era gold smuggling ring in order to free himself from a labor camp. Talk about the genesis of this film and kind of what sparked to you all about doing it.
First of all, it's a great film. Check it out, please. Ethan's mm-hmm. incredible in it.
Thank you. It's very well produced. Very well produced.
And that's why you should see it. Yeah. What is the genesis? What's all the story? We haven't done this before.
We've given no interviews about this. It's born out of the collaboration we had with Patrick McKinley on...
he's the director.
He directed The Wait, and he was the editor on The Good Lord Bird. And I was astounded by the magic that this man possessed. And Ryan and I loved working with him. You know, it's a 7-hour piece, The Good Lord Bird. And there was a lot of places where we could have fallen down. And Patrick was brilliant. And we wanted to work with him again. And he had this idea for this film. And we wanted to, at the same time, Ryan and I were making the last movie stars, the Newman and Woodward documentary, and I was geeking out about why are there no like character driven action movies anymore?
Where's the Harrison Fords and Paul Newmans of the world?
Like you take a movie with Steve McQueen's Bullet or whatever, it's an action movie, but there's like one shootout in it, there's a couple good driving scenes, but it's largely a character driven, just the stakes are high. Treasure Sierra Madre, The Sorcerer. I was like, I wanted, before I get too old, I was like, I want to be in an old fashioned action movie. So I asked my wife, please, can we do an old fashioned action movie? And we developed the script with Simon Fields and Shelby Gaines, who's a partner of ours. He wrote Wildcat and he wrote this. And we really want, it came out of the idea of a shared sensibility with Patrick. And this is his first film, and he's brilliant. And we did it. It's a low budget indie action movie. You know, it's not going to compete with the Avengers, but it's cool.
You could be an Avenger if you want.
Yeah.
It's a sales title, and I wanted to just ask you, kind of like, what are you looking for in a distributor for this film in general? What are the non-negotiables? On our last panel, I talked with a bunch of great indie producers about, it's not just about the price tag. So like, what are the things that you value as filmmakers that you want a distributor to understand about The Wait or in general about your work?
I think what we all want is for it to be seen and to be part of, we're all trying to contribute. Right. And if you want to make relevant art and have it be a part of the collective consciousness, part of the dialogue. And, you know, I'm bringing him up again, but as a friend of Linkletter's, I watched him go through a lot of his cinephile friends were, you know, displeased with the selling of Hitman to Netflix or Nouvelle Vague to Netflix. But the truth of the matter is you can stand on that soapbox, I want this to come out in movie theaters, and 15 people will see the movie. Until audiences are going back to the movie theaters, we're in a little bit of a riddle. Whereas when Hitman came out, and everybody in the world saw it, you know, and they loved it, and this is the way. And so
we're not didactic about what has to happen, I think. And there's a lot of partners, you know, and everybody, what was best for Ethan or best for Under the Influence might not be what's best for the director's career. And we care about everybody who worked on it. So it's a little tricky. I think making sure there's eyeballs on it and how that's done is the larger conversation of independent film right now. And so that's its own panel. And you know, what is the best way to release something and how do you do it? And does it have to have theatrical?
I guess we're all just burying him. Boop, boop. I think it's something we have to consider, but not be too conservative about or too stuck in.
It's like every child needs their own. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, this college is great and then you'll grow up and be great. You kind of need to adjust your thoughts and your opinions based on what's the best life for this film. And we kind of need to see it with an audience. We need to see how does it make people feel? How do people respond? Who are the people that like it and how can we get it to them?
You heard it here first. Go check it out. I I want to zoom out before we wrap. We're in this moment where Netflix is looking to acquire Warner Brothers. we're coming off the sale of Paramount. You all have worked with a wide array, you know, FX, which is part of Disney, Showtime, which is part of sort of the Paramount family, but doesn't quite exist in that form anymore. Sony Pictures Classics. For you, like, what is the thing about this moment of consolidation that scares you for your work and for the company? And what are you still kind of optimistic about?
Well, this is a great thing Ken Burns has been saying about his doc revolution, which is that history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes, right? I mean, it goes in circles, but not exactly. And the fact that we need to learn again why monopolies aren't a good idea is unfortunate. And the easiest example I can give is that imagine if all books published had this one publisher. Well, that publisher would have a tremendous amount of power about what ideas were put in the world and what they weren't. When we walk into a bookstore and you got Knopf and Ferris Strauss and Random House and all these different independent, the New Mexico, University of New Mexico Press is releasing books, and you have all these different voices and all these different curators. And it gives a much wider net that is better for us. We're in danger. It's not like any one of these people is the enemy. Everybody's well-meaning. They all think they're trying to do a good job and they're doing their best. But it's too much power in the hands of too few, which makes it so difficult for the rest of us, because we don't play their game, we lose. And we all benefit from a larger pool of voices and ideas and what people think is good art and what people think is bad art. And so for me, it's really scary. It's really unfortunate. But I did get to work with Sidney Lumet when he was 83 years old. And the one thing he used to talk about all the time is how much the business is always changing. And if you feel like you're in a great period, congratulations, it'll be over soon. And if you feel like you're in a bad period, congratulations, it'll be over soon. You know, in that the pursuit of excellence, people like you, people here, this festival is another place that's curating. The journalists are curating, lots of people. It's up to us to demand excellence from ourselves, from our community, champion it when we see it, you know, take care of it. And we'll survive this, but I find it scary.
It's terrifying. I think the optimistic point of view is it's a great time of innovation and YouTube. Sorry.
I don't think it's you.
That's how you know a panel has been fiery.
Yeah,
when you just keep popping mics.
I mean, there's so many ways that we're trying to create content, find content, release content, and I think that will just get better, and maybe this will force that. It might get worse before it gets better, but I have to believe, you know, we're continually finding ways.
And I do think that's why our time here together right now, at this festival, right this month in 2026, right now, it's actually important that we all be here and talk and see things and have these conversations, because these festivals are where a lot of these ideas can find home and we can galvanize ourselves as a community.
And Sundance has been a leader in, always those conversations.
Well, and thank you to you both for always being willing to participate in these conversations. It's really been great having you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, everybody.